give, make it, do it. Makes us honor, better, faster, stronger.
Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right, comes back to the left, going long for Gordon. He's out there, and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
Well, unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagura.
Happy to be with you on this football Tuesday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. The Browns have an offensive coordinator. It's official. Kyle Shanahan being named the offensive coordinator of the Browns yesterday.
Hurrah!
Hurrah! Got that in the house. And Nathan Zagura here with, he's got a million statistics that he's going to be able to share to describe the greatness of Kyle Shanahan.
Well, there, you know, as I went through it, to be objective, there is a lot of good. There are some things that there are going to be some areas we're going to see that, you know, we're going to hope he can address here. But one thing I will say is that fans of Josh Gordon will be very happy with the findings of an assessment of Kyle Shanahan's 6 years as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Very happy.
Yeah, I can see that. And I can see what he's done, especially with Andre Johnson in Houston.
Yes.
And obviously what he did with very mediocre receivers in Washington.
No
the
receivers.
Most out of them. Well, there were physical people who played
the
position.
Tell Garcon this year. He had nobody.
He didn't really have anybody to work with. But anyhow, we're going to get into all of that. Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns, going to join us at 1:35. We want to get his reaction to the whole Kyle Shanahan hiring and where the Browns go from here with that move. A piece I did for ClevelandBrowns.com regarding Shanahan, wrote a column to the effect of his past, and especially those 4 years he spent in Washington, I believe are going to be very beneficial to his present with the Browns.
I agree.
A guy who went through some tough times, started with Donovan McNabb in 2010, the 1 year that McNabb was there. And it was a bad fit. We talked about this with Mike Jones yesterday from the Washington Post. From the minute that trade was made, it was an ill-advised trade because you had a guy joining a new head coach in Mike Shanahan at the time, a new offensive coordinator in Kyle, his son, and a system that did not have anything to do with what Donovan McNabb does or Donovan McNabb wanted to do or understood. And yet, through all that, even through the turmoil, there were some like record-setting numbers and completions and percentages and things that McNabb did prior to toward the end of the season getting benched in favor of Rex Grossman.
They were kind of
astounding.
In fact, they were the number seven true passing offense that season. What I do is I look at yards passed for and separate that from, because in passing stats, if you were to look that up, that factors in your negative sack yardage.
Right.
So I was looking for true passing yards game. They ranked seventh that season with Donovan McNabb, still averaged 7 yards per attempt. And we'll go into this in a lot of detail.
Yeah.
I got a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when you look at the talent of what he had to work with, let's not forget, 2008, 2009, he was working with Matt Schaub and Sage Rosenfels primarily those two seasons in Houston. 2010, as you pointed out, McNabb and Grossman. 2011, Grossman and Beck. 2012, a healthy RG3, which was by far his best season, and shows an unbelievable departure from everything he did before. So for people who say Kyle Shanahan can run only one system, the numbers will tell you that is absolutely not true. And then last year, we know the turmoil that happened there with, of course, RG3, Kirk Cousins, and an unhealthy RG3, and just kind of the dysfunction at the junction that ended up occurring in Washington last season. But you make a very good point in the sense that he's a guy that I think when we really get into this, we're going to see is going to continue a lot of what Norv Turner did, but also has a history of success in terms of generating a very solid yards per carry for his ground game, even if he doesn't go to it as often at certain points in his career as he has recently.
Right, and I think it's all part of the evolution. And the point I made in this column was what he learned dealing with McNabb that 1 year, but especially those follow over the course of those next few years, and especially the last two as offensive coordinator, working with RG3, working with the big personality that RG3 has, working with the so-called interference of RG3's father in the organization, not being happy
RG2.
With the way his son was being handled by the Redskins and especially by Mike Shanahan, and then going directly to the top, kind of going over the head of both coaches to the owner, Daniel Snyder, and having a relationship with him that other players didn't have. And that's not entirely uncommon that a star quarterback is going to have that. But Robert Griffin III, look, knew what he was, what cachet he carried in that town. He maximized that. He wouldn't be the first guy to do that. And I'm not sure I fault him for doing that, to have that sort of in his pocket in a very insecure world of professional football and especially being a player. What I would, though, add to that is someone needed to fix that relationship, and I'm going to put some of that onus on Kyle Shanahan. He could have handled it better, certainly on RG3, but mostly on Mike Shanahan, who as the head coach had to be the whatever, the peacemaker, the consensus builder. He had to pull sides together. That never happened.
And I'm also going to put it on Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Redskins, who fostered an environment that allowed this to happen. I don't think he empowered his coaches enough versus the power of RG3 and RG2, the RGs in Washington. And that makes a tough situation for a coach, right? Because at some point, you could only do what you're empowered to do and what you can take care of. And I think that was, as I said, some dysfunction at the junction down there, and it ended up hurting them and costing a lot of people their jobs and costing, in many ways, RG3 the reputation that he had enjoyed in his first year compared to what he enjoyed or didn't enjoy last year.
Great guy of, you know, of almost too good to be true. Just outstanding player, great person, and so, you know, so intelligent and so engaging. And I enjoyed every opportunity I had. I spoke a lot with him leading up to the 2012 draft, spent some time at the Rookie Symposium, which was held right here in Berea. He was there for that. Wonderful kid all the way around. And I'm sure he's still a really good kid. But the situation got away from him, I think. It certainly got away from the Redskins. And what did Kyle Shanahan learn from that? I think he learned plenty. And I think he's bringing plenty to the table as he arrives here with the Browns, learning from those things, wanting to do some reparation of his reputation. We heard that comment, it'll stay with me, that Mike Jones mentioned, got some stink on him. And that's good.
I like to have that, a little chip on the shoulder.
That would be a chip on the shoulder. That would be the need to kind of correct some things. And then the other part of what I mentioned in the column was just getting out from under the shadow of Dad, of Mike Shanahan, back-to-back Super Bowl victories, kind of came in as a superstar to Washington. He was courted by multiple teams. He got a mammoth contract to take over that club. He got the keys to the castle in Washington. And here was Kyle basically, you know, having a job that others in the outside world, me included, said, well, he got that because Dad was there. Dad took care of him. But now he's on his own. Now he's getting to run his own show as an offensive coordinator. This is a big step for him and a growth, and I hope a maturing opportunity for still a young guy at 34 years old.
There's no question about it, and it is a chance for him to grow and for a chance for him to say to everybody who would say he's only had success because of his father or being with one of his father's guys, as you called him, Uncle Gary, down in Houston, to have that opportunity to spread his wings, take a team that's going to, I think, end up when we're all done with this offseason. And there's a lot of onus on the front office to make sure this happens. But I think when we're done with this offseason, with this free agency period, with, of course, this draft, there's going to be a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. We already know there will be, without question, one of the most dynamic, if not the most dynamic, wide receivers in the NFL. A guy who reminds so many of a young Andre Johnson, except that he's more explosive, more of a big play guy. When Josh Gordon, you've got a great tight end. These are two staples of the Kyle Shanahan offense, utilizing those positions very effectively, which is a very, very good thing, in my opinion, for this offense when you add in another receiver, a running back. And we'll see. Kyle Shanahan, when he's had a good running back, has certainly gotten the most out of his ground game. He's had three seasons with tremendous production from running backs. When he does that, he is very, very effective.
Yeah, I think so. Without a doubt that the whole dynamic of this relationship with Kyle Shanahan and the Browns, Kyle Shanahan and Mike Pettine, are they getting together at kind of the perfect time in their respective careers? Here is Mike Pettine, who has built himself as wanting to be, of course, what he is now, a head coach, but as a defensive coordinator, and having been at the elbow of Rex Ryan from the time that he enters the league as a video guy. Then he's a coordinator. He's working with him as an assistant in Baltimore, then a coordinator with the Jets, and essentially in that shadow. And he's breaking away from the Rex shadow. Now, he did have a year without Rex in Buffalo last season, and it worked out reasonably well with how that defense performed, but it was a team that only won six games. But still, the lingering sense, the lingering feeling was that he did a lot to make that defense better and was ready for his shot that the Browns felt he deserved. But he, too, is a guy now, as a head coach, gets a chance to put a real stamp on his career post-Rex Ryan, just as young Kyle Shanahan as a coordinator gets to put a stamp on his career post-dad Mike Shanahan working for him. And I think the two of them come together at a good time, at a really good time for an organization that is going to bring in more talent, more infusion of talent through the draft, through free agency, that the cupboard is not truly bare.
It will not be bare.
And it won't be bare. And what this offseason may bring to the whole thing. And I'm very interested to see, very curious to see how it will work out, but I think it's a good timing thing.
I think it's a great timing thing, and it's a guy, Mike Pettine's coming in, as you mentioned, the stank on Kyle Shanahan, as he said, chip on his shoulder. Mike Pettine, this is his first opportunity to prove what he can do. I think you're going to have a culture of hunger, a culture of guys that are all here working together to get this thing on the right track, and that's what the Browns need, to get on the right track. All the talk, all the rhetoric is just that, and that's one of the things that I loved about Mike Pettine's opening speech when he was named the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. When we get it done in September, that's what's going to matter. That's what people want to see. But I'll tell you what, when we were sitting here going through this process, for me to end up where we did with this Cleveland Browns coaching staff, you've got to feel happy about it. I do. I feel very happy about it, because when we go through these numbers, Kyle Shanahan, which we're going to do in great detail over the course of the show, so if you want to kind of get a Kyle Shanahan offense 101 and what it means for the Cleveland Browns, we're going to talk about that today. But when you look at what Norv Turner did on offense, I was happy with Norv Turner. To get a guy who's got a proven track record, and I think when we get down to it, in many ways is very similar to what Norv Turner got out of his players in terms of the number one receiver, in terms of the tight end, in terms of running backs, et cetera, quarterback production, we're going to see a lot of those same things. And I believe in Mike Pettine, we're going to have an improved defense over last year. For whatever reason, Ray Horton in the defense of the 2013 Cleveland Browns was never able to solve the nickel defense problem, the inability to get off the field in third and longs, the inability to stop drives. That never was fixed. And Mike Pettine, if he did anything well in Buffalo, it was get to the quarterback second in the NFL in sacks and take care of business on those third downs and obvious passing situations.
Without a doubt. I think the talent had something to do with it, or lack thereof. I'm going to certainly put something on the coaching staff for maybe not finding consistently that pass rush that we thought, that front seven that we thought
was going to be the hallmark,
would take pressure off the secondary, would maybe make it less of a problem to know there were holes back there. But those holes, and by the way, it's not just the secondary. Those holes were in the linebacking core. Those holes were throughout. The talent in the back end of that defense wasn't sufficient enough to handle the passing games of even mediocre teams, but it is also on your coaching staff to figure out ways schematically to get to the quarterback, to try to disrupt the timing of routes, to do all those things that you can do when you're maybe short of people who can cover. And that was a problem. So it was a combination of things, and that's something that this team needs to address. By the way, on today's show at 2 p.m., we mentioned Jim Donovan at 1:35. At 2 p.m., we're going to do a review of the safeties. We're going to continue with our series of position reviews and grades from the 2013 season and then go over the defensive backs in general. Yeah, we'll do that around 2:45. So we've got a lot of that to cover. When we bring in Gerard Cherry, perfect guy, obviously, to go into that. But we'll have some we do this on Tuesdays. We'll have our After Further Review segment. Well, I guess Jason didn't want to play the sound. I thought that
after was the further review.
Yeah, you did.
After
again,
further review.
There it is. Thanks, Jason. That's okay. It was just one of those radio. We kind of lost that. But anyway, after further review, so you'll hear that. And we want to get into some of the lingering Super Bowl issues that we didn't touch yesterday, just in the interest of time. We had so much to cover on yesterday's show, our thoughts on Super Bowl 48, the blowout that was that game, and what are some of the remaining stories, the lingering elements of that game, Peyton Manning's legacy being one of them, and will we see maybe the Seahawks returning to the Super Bowl next year? I think we will. I think they're setting up something that's going to be sustainable for a long, long time for that Seattle team. All right, we're just getting this thing rolling. It is a Football Tuesday. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura. It is Cleveland Browns Daily. We are driven by Liberty Ford, and you are listening to ESPN 850. WKNR.